Hey, how's everybody doing? Well, I'm excited to continue today in our series, Repurposed. And man, it's been a great series so far. It's been challenging for me personally. I've had to wrestle through a lot of things. We talked about some heavy stuff, and the whole idea of this series is that we take parts of our life that we wish we could have a do-over or repurpose. We could tweak them and make them even better. And we've talked about pain, we've talked about failure, we've talked about all kinds of things. And today, we're going to talk about a subject that I'm probably the least qualified person to talk about, and that is parenting. And I'm looking for my wife. I just want to make sure she's not making eye contact with me because she knows I'm a fraud. Okay, we're going to talk about parenting. And man, I'm intimidated to talk about that because parenting is really, really tough. And I don't always do a super great job, but I will tell you, I am a proud parent. Any proud parents out there? Yes, good. That's good. I'm the proud parent of two amazing boys, 11 and 6. Brendan on the left, Braden on the right. Very handsome fellows, which tells me they are not my kids. And Annette, we need to talk when we get home. Okay, so great, great kids. And yeah, we named them Brendan and Braden to confuse the grandparents. So Brendan is about to turn 12, and I can't believe it, that next month I'll be the dad of a 12-year-old. And I was thinking about some of the challenges that we faced as a parent. One of those was we actually had to outsource teaching him how to ride a bike. We tried, and we couldn't do it, and so we actually left him with the Mock family for a weekend. you laugh, but that's actually true. And his family so graciously taught Brendan how to ride a bike. And so that's great. So now we're looking for a family to teach Braden, who's 6, how to ride a bike. So there's you can go up to the info booth after the service. That's a lie, and don't do it. So Brendan's almost 12, and I was thinking back about one of the hardest times of raising a parent, or raising a kid, and that is potty training. Everyone remember potty training? When Brendan was about 2, we were sort of in the midst of working on the whole potty training thing. And so we took him to see a movie. And just like all parents do, I asked him right before we went into the movie, do you need to go potty? And he said, no, of course. And then about 9 minutes into the movie, as most kids do, he said, Dad, I need to go potty. Or it's like, Dad, I need to go potty. And so I said, oh, gosh, can't you hold it till the end of the movie? And I'm like, well, he's 2, and he's got, like, the training, whatever, so I better take him. So we go to the bathroom, and I realize, you know, he's not tall enough to reach the urinal, and he's not tall enough to really stand in front of the toilet. And so what I did was, what any clever parent would do, is I picked him up, and I stood him on the toilet seat, okay? So 1 foot on the left, 1 foot on the right. Just giving you time to get the mental image here of how, don't try this, please, for God's sake. When you go home, don't do this, okay? So he starts going number one, and I realize pretty quickly he's still at that stage where he doesn't quite know how to aim. And so he starts sort of like, peeing on the toilet seat and everywhere else. And so I kind of explained to him, like, son, you're a man. You have to, there's a certain way you got to do this. I don't really want to go into details right now, but ask your parents if you don't know. And and I said, there's a certain way you kind of have to aim into the toilet. And so I explained it to him. And to his credit, he gave a valiant effort. Honestly, he did. He did the very, very best he could. But he just started peeing everywhere. And on the wall a little bit, on the floor. I mean, and so, like, I sprang into action and grabbed his arm so that I could, like, damage control and sort of try to steer it a little bit. And he still couldn't hit the toilet. Now, some women are convinced right now I'm describing the bathroom habits of your husband on a regular basis. So he starts peeing everywhere, okay? I start laughing so hard that I'm shaking, okay? Which is a problem because I'm holding his torso and providing a sense of balance. And so as I'm, like, you know, shaking, he starts looking like one of those sprinklers, just, you know, it was pretty amazing. And the funniest thing about the whole thing is, as sort of the sprinkler cycled back to the left, it trailed off, like there was sort of a downward pattern. It was pretty amazing. I don't even know if I could do that if I tried now. Downward to the left, and it hit the floor, and I happened to notice that under the stall there was this shoe. And as soon as he anointed the floor the shoe yanked back. And then I knew we were busted. And so at that point, I actually grabbed him, like, okay, we got to finish this thing up, pull his pants up, go out of there. I'll be honest, we did not even wash our hands. I was so embarrassed, and I was laughing so hard, and I came out, and Annette was like, what happened? I'm like, we got to go. So we get in the car. And so I would actually like to just pause for a moment, and if you are a Cinemark employee, I would like to apologize deeply from the bottom of my heart. You know what? I came to realize that parenting is really tough, isn't it? Parenting is really, really, really tough. And the truth is, pretty much every person that I know that's a parent will, if they're really honest, will admit that there are tons and tons of times that they feel like in their life they're a failure as a parent. I'm not saying all of the time, but we all do things or have encounters with our kids that make us feel like a failure, don't we? And if you don't think that you stink as a parent sometimes, I can assure you, your kids are pretty messed up. Okay, so therapy, yes, call me. Okay, you know, I think as we get older as parents, we sort of have this idea we're going to do the best we can. We make some shifts along the way, but then we have our adult friends who they start telling us about how their parents ruined them, right? My mom did this, or my dad did that, and it made me an awful person, and I'm in therapy for this and this and this. And I think therapy is a wonderful thing. I think you need to be in therapy, and you shouldn't run away from that. But we get scared sometimes because we ask ourselves this question, what if I mess my kid up? Anyone bold enough and honest enough to admit that you've thought that to yourself? What if I mess my kid? Thank you. Thank you. All of us. We all sort of wrestle with that because parenting is tough. It's a lot of pressure, isn't it? Parenting is hard, and it sort of takes our expectations and turns them on their head. And sometimes parenting, it leads to some of the worst pain and hurt in all of our life. But I will say, parenting is also one of the most rewarding and beautiful journeys any person can go through. And I just want to speak to those of you who don't have kids yet, and maybe you're trying and you just haven't had it happen yet or not quite old enough. Let me just say, like, your day will come. And everyone has influence with children in some way. And so today, as we talk about parenting, I think we're going to talk about some things that can help everyone, no matter where they are in their journey. And here's what I know to be true about parenting. Parenting, to be good at parenting, requires a lot of trial and error. There's not like I wish I could just say, hey, we're going to talk about parenting today, and here are the 5 steps to being a great parent. And then go pick up my book on the way out. It doesn't work like that, right? We enter into parenting with sort of our own plan of, like, here's how it's going to go down. And then, like, day 2, the manual goes out the door, and it's like, oh my gosh, what have we got ourselves into? Because parenting is hard, and there are always areas that we can grow in. I also realize that not every parent, as we talk about this, not everyone has the same philosophy on parenting, especially when we talk about discipline. Everyone has sort of a different idea of what that's all about. And I'm just going to let you know, I'm going to talk about discipline a little bit today. Everyone's got a different expectation of what parenting looks like. And so I'm not here today to say, now here's the Larry Boatwright system to perfect parenting, because my wife would stab me and say, you're an idiot. It doesn't exist. I'm just going to share some questions that I'm wrestling with on my own as I'm struggling to be a good parent. That I think these questions, if we're honest, whether we're about to start the parenting journey, or we hope to someday, or if we're already in the midst of parenting, or even if our kids have moved out of the home and they're older and we're starting to be grandparents for the first time, I think these questions can help all of us in our journey as we sort of raise these children together. And so the first question I want to throw out to you is sort of a big question. It's this: am I trusting God with their journey? Can I get you to say that with me? Am I trusting God with their journey? I don't know about you, but that's overwhelming to me because our kids' lives are really complex, aren't they? Their journey is not just some little simple thing I've got to think about. They have this whole spiritual component to their life. They have a vocational component to their life, and they have their own unique, like, wiring and personality and gifting. So when I think about, am I trusting God with their journey, that's such a huge question to ask myself, and I thought it would be helpful to sort of break it down into some tangible things. But one idea is this, that parents have roughly 7,000 days with their kids from the time that they're born until the time that they leave home. You have a window of about 7,000 days of influence over your kids. There are some parents right now who maybe your kids are a little older, and you're saying, you know, we're hitting about the 12,000 day mark now, and we've been trying to get them out of the house. My pastoral advice for you is to buy a new pair of boots, okay? You'll get that tomorrow. Do I really have to? Oh my gosh, this is going to be a long day, I can tell you. You guys need help understanding what it is I'm saying. Okay. In those 7,000 days, we feel a lot of pressure because we know we only have them for a window, right? I only have one little opportunity to really make a difference. And so we put pressure on ourselves to make a difference. But listen, there's freedom. Listen, there is freedom in learning to trust God in this journey versus putting all the pressure on yourself. There's a lot of freedom there. And it might not feel like it because it feels like such a big thing, and it is. It is a lot of responsibility, but there's freedom in realizing that God hasn't put all of the pressure on us. And when we start to realize that, our perspective begins to shift. And it moves us from trying to conform them or control them to our image or the idea of what we think their life is supposed to look like to a place where we start to trust God's plan for them. We start trying to unlock God's plan for them, morphing them into God's image and what he wants for them and not what I want for them. And think about that. And it really is a matter of stewardship. The truth is, though we might tell them this sometimes, we don't actually own our children, okay? The kid's like, that's true, amen. I appreciate that. Preach it, brother. We don't own our kids. It's almost like God has said, I'm going to loan you these children. I want to do something significant in their lives, but it's up to you to steward and to manage that and help them in their life. The scriptures say this. This is a really familiar scripture. Train up a child in the way they should go. When they're old, what? They won't depart from it. And I think it's easy to hear that verse and go, okay, I got to train up that child, and I need to train them to do everything the way that I would do it or to do things the way that I think they should be done. And I wonder when we look at it that way if we miss a critical part of this verse, a critical meaning that's sort of painfully obvious as we look at that scripture. Notice that it says, train up a child in the way, what? They should go. Not the way I think they should go, not the way I plan for them to go, not the way my little formula or my spreadsheets got all mapped out. It's train them up in the way that they should go. And it's more about helping them find the fit of who they really should be. And what I'm learning is that trusting God with their journey means that it's our responsibility to help them discover God's will and God's plan for their own life. And trusting that he made them who they are for a reason. But I also know that it's overwhelming, and so I want to talk about a couple of areas within that that we can really think about as we look at trusting God with our kids' journey. And one of those is their personality and gifting. You know, isn't it amazing how early on in the life of a child you can sort of start to see their personality develop? Isn't that wild? When Annette was pregnant with Brayden, who's the six-year-old now, he didn't really move around a lot. And he was just a real laid-back kid, even in utero. And it was scary sometimes because he didn't move a lot. And we would have the conversation, like, did you feel him kick today? And it was nerve-wracking because he was so laid-back. And then he was born, and we've sort of learned that he's just kind of a laid-back, observant kid. And this is the part of the talk where you're going to hate me for just a moment when I tell you that he didn't cry a lot when he was born. And within 2 or 3 weeks, he started sleeping through the night. I consider that a gift from the Lord because Brendan didn't sleep through the night until he was 9. So, no, that's not true. But, you know, Brendan cried a lot more, and, you know, we were first-time parents, and it felt like we had no idea what we were doing. I sometimes think that, like, the firstborn gets the raw end of the deal, wouldn't you think? Because, like, that's where we practice and, like, do all the wrong things. And then with the second one, we're, like, great parents to them. And so when our kid's 25 and in therapy and bitter at his parents, the youngest is like, I just don't get it. They were awesome for me. Anyway, so Brayden was born, and sort of his personality reflects what we knew about him even before he was born. He's kind of quiet. He's a pretty observant kid. He pays attention to the world around him. And a few nights ago, Annette was driving with Brayden. And they pulled up to the street corner, and there was this homeless guy standing on the street corner, and it's really cold right now. And for whatever reason, Braden thinks that homeless people are called hobos. And I don't know if he thinks that, like, at the end of the day, they get on a train and, like, go to another town or what the deal is. But he thought this person was a hobo. And he looked at this person and he asked Annette if hobos get boxes in the winter. And he said, you know, it seems like it's probably cold in that box. He's pretty aware for a six-year-old to realize this person's out there begging for food or begging for money or whatever it is they might need that day, and realizing they don't have a place to lay their head that's warm like we do. And so he said when he grows up, he wants to have a big family. He wants to have one of his own kids, and then he wants to have a bunch of other kids who are homeless that he can take in and, as he said, make boat rides out of them and give them a warm place to live. I think that's amazing that he's wired, even as a six-year-old, to have compassion and have a tender heart toward other people. And I realize when I look at that and see how he's actually wired, that it would be wrong of me to try to change his personality, to try to conform him into the image of something he was never meant to be. And I think we have a responsibility to value our kid's personality and to celebrate it and to embrace it. And that's really tough if our kids are born and we thought they were going to have one kind of personality. Maybe it's you think your kid's going to be super outgoing and they're uber laid back. Or maybe you're uber, you know, laid back and reserved and your kid, you know, is on a 90-mile-an-hour adrenaline rush all the time. That's hard to come to terms with when our kids are different than we thought they would be, isn't it? But I think one of the most damaging things that we can do to a kid is to devalue them. Is to not affirm the person that God made them to be and to even let them see that we wish they were some other kind of kid. It's so hurtful. And every kid is different. Our oldest, he's a super smart kid. He's a real friendly, outgoing kid, likes people, walks in a room, likes talking to people, likes trying new things. He's also built a lot like me in the sense he looks like the model athlete. Greek god is the word I sort of would use. Actually, Brendan is like lean and mean. He's thin. I have one bump on my belly. He has six bumps on his belly. And he's just a lean, mean machine. Totally looks like he could be an athlete, could be a football player. He's totally uninterested in football, which blows my mind. I mean, you could say to him right now, hey, Brendan, Super Bowl's tonight. And he'd probably, you know, he's not going to get excited about that. He will get excited about writing. He's a creative. He likes drawing. He likes writing. He likes storytelling. He likes filmmaking type stuff. Recently, I found out he likes like digital graphic design and those sorts of things, stuff that I didn't even know. So he's totally different than I imagine. I also was a musician when I was growing up, and so I have always hoped that my kids would be musicians because I love music. It moves me. It moves my soul. And growing up, like, Brendan would sing occasionally. He didn't listen to music much. He didn't sing a lot when he did. He struggled sometimes with pitch, and I just kind of thought, well, he's just not going to be. He's going to be an artist, and that's fine. This last year, he expressed interest in playing the trombone, and he started playing the trombone, and man, he's really, really good. And I love that about him, and I affirm him in that, and I realize that if I tried to force that on him at a time when he wasn't ready and said, you're going to be a musician, you're going to go to a rehearsal every day and do this, this, and this, and this, I could have pushed him away from the very thing that he's wired to really enjoy doing. He loves it. I don't have to remind him to practice. He does it on his own. And I think it's so important that we give our kids room to experiment and to find those things that are a natural fit for them. Which leads me to another part of trusting God with their journey, and that is with their vocation. That's with their career. You know, it's easy to have a sort of a plan for our kid's life. My kid, I want him to be a doctor or a lawyer or a scientist or an actor or an NFL player or whatever it might be. And we've all seen those parents that feel like because they weren't able to do something in their life, they try to live vicariously through their kids. You know what I'm talking about? And so their kids are like taking the classes they want their kids to take, and their kids on track to become this person that the kid's really not wired to be. And there's all this conflict between mom and dad and the kid because they're trying to make this kid do a career that the kid's either not equipped to do or they're not interested in or whatever it might be. And it sets them up for some really frustrating times in their life. It sets them up to experience failure and heartbreak and frustration because they're not really walking in a vocation that reflects the personality and the gifting, the wiring that God has really given to them. I think kids can do a lot of things. They could try a whole bunch of different things. But when we force our idea of what their career is supposed to be like onto them, that can be very, very damaging. You know, for some of us, we've got to let go of the idea that our kid's going to be the brain surgeon or the lawyer or the famous, you know, movie star, and embrace the idea that maybe they're wired to be a writer or a poet or a singer or an accountant or to work at a bookstore or a coffee shop or to be a humanitarian or work in a bakery. What their idea of what life's supposed to look like and be might often look like what we think. And for some of us, we need to let our kids experiment with different classes and workshops. Imagine giving our kids opportunities to try their hand at a number of things when the stakes are small so they can figure out what it is that they're supposed to do. And then probably the hardest part of trusting God with their journey is with their spiritual journey. And I don't know about you, but for me, that's like the scariest part. It's intimidating to think that somehow during this window of time that I've got my kids, that I've got to somehow raise them to love God and to know God and be great moral people. I don't know about you, but that overwhelms me sometimes because it's such a huge piece of the pie. And I do think that it's important that we invest in the lives of our kids. I think spiritually, we need to teach them about the things of God and help them to understand the scriptures and that God loves us and that God has a plan for us and that God wants to draw us into sort of the narrative of that story. I do think that's important. And that means more than just talking about it with them on the way home from church to home on Sundays. I think it's a constant conversation. And I think it moves also to helping them see that God is at work everywhere. Did you know that? God's not just at work at church. God doesn't just move through reading the Bible. I love the Bible. I'm a nerd. I have more commentaries than a man should probably have. I love the scriptures, but that's not the only place that God speaks to us. The other morning, I was driving with Braden to school, and we were pulling out of our neighborhood, and I looked at the sky, and the sunrise was, in the wintertime, like sometimes the sunrise is just spectacular. It's like there's this giant canvas from the east to the west, and it's like God just dipped in some paint, just went and just painted on the sky. And it's pretty wild because I realized like this gorgeous thing was from our Creator, and I told Braden, like, it's almost like God painted that just for us. Because I think it's important that as kids work on their own spiritual journey, they learn to experience God through creation. Or they learn to look for God in all kinds of places, through the voice of a friend, or through a film, or through music, or through other people. I want them to understand that there's goodness and beauty throughout this earth. And that's why goodness and beauty is one of our values here at The Orchard. It wasn't just some title that we selected. We really felt like why we have art around the building, why we try to get our kids to experience goodness and beauty is to help them see that God is good so that he might draw them to himself. So we teach our kids the things of God and we teach them to see God at work throughout the world. But I think there's also a lot to be said for letting our kids be seekers. And parents, this is one of the hardest parts of this journey. Because the goal isn't really to have them memorize a 20-point doctrinal statement or to memorize entire books of the Bible by the time that they're 12. That's not what that journey is all about. I think it's more about setting the table, and teaching them about the things of God and what he's doing and letting him do the work and letting them seek God on their own. That's a huge part of the journey, but it's also one of the scariest parts of the journey because once we start letting them seek God on their own and seek God on their own journey, what happens is they start asking some tough questions. And we think to ourselves, what if they start asking tough questions when they turn into a teenager? You know, questions like, why do people suffer? Why are there starving people? Why does the Bible say this or that? Or why does it not even speak to this or that thing? Our kids start to ask us those questions and it makes us nervous. Or questions that no one in the world has the answer to, like, why is the McRib only available 3 months out of the year? Oh, man. I have, like, simultaneous, like, hunger pangs and abdominal pains at the same time after seeing that. I'm going to pose an even greater question. What is even in a McRib? This, my friends, is a question I think God even scratches his head over at times. What is in a McRib? And if your kids ask you that, I have no answers for you. Listen, whatever the question might be, when our kids ask us tough questions, here's what I say. Good. Ask the tough questions. Because I know that if I force my faith onto my kids and when they start to ask difficult questions about God and I shut them down, what they do is they take the faith and they put it into a box and they hold it for a season, but there will come a time when they will realize that's their faith and not mine, and they will jettison it when life gets tough because they haven't learned to seek and ask the tough questions and own their faith. And so when they come and ask those tough questions, well, what's our response? I think that's a wonderful time for us to show that we love them unconditionally, that it's okay for them to ask those questions. It's something we encourage. We want to create an environment where our kids can ask questions and dialogue about the tough things in life so they have a chance to think through it. We help them discover it. And you know what? It's okay sometimes to say, I don't know the answer. I think some parents feel the pressure of being like the answer man or the answer box when our kids come ask us questions. I think we teach our kids a lot when we just say, you know, I'm kind of wrestling with that thing myself. I don't know. Let's talk about this. Let's discover maybe the answer ourselves. And I can tell you, my kids ask me questions all the time about God and heaven and the Bible and people and suffering and all of those sorts of things. And I've got 4 years of seminary, and a lot of times I just have to look at them and say, I don't know. I don't know. That's a great question. And I think it's okay to let them know that you're wrestling with that question, because when you do that, they begin to unlock it for themselves, and their faith becomes their faith. They become aware of it and able to own it, and a challenged faith is a strong faith. And listen, I know that that's hard. I know it's hard. I can't tell you how many parents I've talked to that are scared to death that at some point their kids are going to run away from them. Their kids are going to abandon the faith that they knew as a child. But I think if we really position them to hear from God, and we really speak true to that little voice inside of them that says, here's how I'm uniquely wired, here's who I'm supposed to be, I think that they're going to stick with us. Now I want to ask a question that I think every parent asks themselves at some point in their journey. This is sort of the hard area, so get ready. Here's the question. What do I do about discipline? Would you say that with me? What do I do about discipline? Man, just the word discipline, it has so many different connotations to it. We all came from different types of homes. We saw all different kinds of discipline. Some of us came from abusive homes, and our parents' idea of discipline was bringing the hammer. Other people came from homes where their parents didn't know what discipline was, or they didn't do any kind of discipline. It was sort of like, raise yourself. And so there are those of us who went through that, and we're struggling through life trying to figure out what this is all about. And for all of us, we sort of have baggage from this because we've all experienced other people trying to discipline their own kids. I'm from Oklahoma. I'm from the South. And I can tell you some of the weirdest examples of discipline I've ever seen are like in a Walmart, okay? This is like, it's like a magnet for dysfunction for people trying to learn how to discipline their kids, you know? And it's like dad's got the kid by the wrist going, you will do X, Y, Z, and he's walking him through the aisle, and the kid's got the sippy cup, you know, in the other hand, their diaper falls off on the floor, and dad's just making a beeline to get out of there, whatever it looks like. It's sort of like a great, I kind of like to look at it as that's a great example of what not to do. So if you want some lessons in parenting, there you go to certain stores in rural Oklahoma. I actually had someone come up to me after the last service and say, hey, I'm from Oklahoma in this certain town. This is the Walmart you have to go to see the really dysfunctional people. So I think I'm on to something there. You know, the Bible actually has a lot to say about discipline. The book of Proverbs is filled with great insight about discipline. Like this verse in Proverbs 19 that says, discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Well, that's probably good wisdom. Some of you, your parents right now are like, oh, no. Oh, man. I need to write that one down. But probably one of the most well-known verses in all of the scriptures about discipline is this verse that says, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. We've all heard that verse. It's just a cultural verse. For those of us who grew up hearing it in the King James, it says what? Spare the rod and spoil the child. And I think, unfortunately, this verse has lost the essence of its meaning because we've heard it taught this way, or we read into this that the essence of discipline is I need to spank my kid often so that he knows what's right and what's wrong, and I'm going to train him so that he will be on the straight and narrow. But I think we miss something really important in this verse. This verse has its roots in the ancient shepherding practices. And if you go to certain parts of the world, even today, there are shepherds who are raising herds or caring for herds in the exact same way that they've been doing for thousands of years. And for these shepherds, the idea of the rod is something that they use on a regular basis to bring protection and guidance to those sheep. They would never use the rod to hit a sheep. They wouldn't do that because it would teach the sheep to be afraid of them. They literally extend this rod in front of a wayward sheep and pull them back in. That's what the hook on the other end was for. I'm going to pull you into line and to align you where you're supposed to be. So I think sparing the rod for you and I has a lot less to do with spanking and more to do with setting boundaries and guiding our kids. And listen, whatever you believe about spanking, I just want to submit to you that discipline is more about using our words. Our kids need our words more than our hands when it comes to discipline. Discipline's not to control our kids and make them act the way that they should. It comes from the word disciple, and the core idea of discipline is to teach. And there's a huge difference between telling someone something and teaching them something, isn't there? I could tell you four things all day long, or I could let you experience something and teach you through a journey that's going to sear into your heart that you're going to use for the rest of your life. And telling takes the decision-making away from a child. If I tell the kid everything they need to know how to do, they're just pre-programmed. And then when they hit an obstacle that doesn't compute, they don't know what to do. They melt down. Whereas if I teach them, I help them to think for themselves and to really understand that there are true consequences for their poor decisions. What if we saw discipline less as punishment and more about teaching our kids to think well? Think about that. What if as parents we made a sort of a fundamental shift where it was less about punishing them when they do things wrong and more about teaching them to think, to learn well? And I think that happens most often by us setting good boundaries with them and having healthy expectations of consequences. So I'm grounding you for a year. That's not a healthy, realistic consequence. Did you know that? I need to tell my mom that. Like, hey, when you ground me until I'm 27, okay, you're not going to stick to it, number one. And number two, it's a little bit excessive. So it's helping them have actual, real, valid consequences. But then it's also coming alongside them as a parent and empathizing with them as they begin to suffer that actual consequence, as the weight of that consequence sort of falls on them. That's just a basic human understanding of one another. My child, I understand where you're at. I understand that that's tough, and I'm sorry. So we give them real consequences, and we have empathy with them as they face that, and then we guide them to think well through the decisions that they made. For example, what if instead of screaming at our kids because they're not in bed on time, because it's after 8:30 or 9:30 or in some people's house 11:30 or whatever it is, and the light's still on, and we're screaming at our kids trying to get them, you will get in the bed and you will go to sleep. What if we said, okay, stay up as late as you want. I'm going to bed. Someone's head just melted down just now. Oh my gosh, what? Well, what if we did that and we said, hey, I'm going to bed. I love you. I will see you in the morning. And then the next morning, they wake up and they're exhausted. We don't go into like a I told you so mentality. We just ask them how they're doing. How you doing? Oh, man, I am so incredibly tired. And so they've admitted the consequence to their action, you see. They're really, really tired because they stayed up too late. Now it's not dad tried to get them in bed and now they're mad at dad. Now they're understanding there's a real consequence for a decision that they made. And so what if when they say they're tired, instead of me saying, well, I told you so, if you'd only blah, 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 done this, what if we moved into empathy and said, I understand. I know. Sometimes when I get up and I'm really tired, it's a tough day too. I know where you're at. I'm sorry. And then what if we take a next step and help them ask good questions like, why do you think you're so tired? What if we use questions to help them think through how they would handle it? Things like, well, what do you think you might do differently next time? Almost always, over time, as a kid learns to do this, to think critically about why they have a real consequence in their life, they stop pairing mom and dad as the bad guy, and they start seeing mom and dad as someone who's helping me learn for myself. And they learn to make those decisions on their own. And listen, I know this works because we've done this with our kids. We don't do it perfectly. We mess up plenty of times, and their response, they mess up plenty of times too. But I see like our own kids saying, I'm not going to play that game too long because XYZ. Or we see them actually starting to think through their own consequences. And that's really great because I know that if I can help them get to a place where they can think through their own consequences now as a child, and I'm partnering with them and helping them to learn, then when they grow up, they're going to be able to make logical, rational decisions in life. If I shelter them and protect them from any kind of failure or any kind of consequences in their life, what's going to happen when they grow up? They're not going to be able to think for themselves. And that's really, really tough because we have an obligation to help them in their life, and it's so much easier to say, do this and do that. It's a whole lot more work to guide them to think for themselves. But I think the payoff is so much better. And I think this, if we can help them learn through those things when they're little and the stakes are small, they'll learn to make good decisions when they're growing up. And I really do believe that that's what training up a child in the way that they should go. Bless you. That was a cute sneeze. Really cool. When I sneeze, like my face rips off. That was like a mouse. It was awesome. More of a Japanese mouth. That was good. I think we really help our kids do that. We're setting them up to train them up in the way that they should go. And when they're old, they won't depart from it. One last thing I want to talk about real quick is this question. Am I charting my own journey? Am I charting my own journey? You know, this really has to do with the fact that you're not your own parents. You're not your parents' friend, or you're not the parents on TV on that sitcom that you like. You're who you are, and we all have to make a conscious decision to parent in the way that we feel is right. And sometimes that's very different than our parents parented us. Some of us, maybe we had abusive parents, and so we really have to wrestle through that. Or we had real hands-off parents, and so we have no idea what to do. Some of us had the uber-protective, like, helicopter parents. You know, I'm going to come over here, and I'm going to solve every problem. I'm going to fix everything for you, and I'm never going to let you have a boo-boo because I want to protect you, and I want to love you. Parents like that come from a place of love, but they don't set their kids up to face the reality of what real life looks like. Real life is not all about bailouts, is it? It's learning to think about your own consequences. And so those of us that had those, we don't even know how to make decisions. Here's the bottom line. You're responsible to chart your own parenting journey. There's no cookie-cutter parenting. And the reality is, if you don't make a conscious decision about how you're going to raise your kids, you're going to go on autopilot, and you're going to do exactly what your parents did. That's just what's hardwired into us. Now, I know this is true because we always find ourselves doing things that were exactly like that thing that your parents did when they were grown up and you were a kid and you thought, oh, I hate how my parents, blah, 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 blah. And then when you're in your 30s and you're parenting, your 20s, your 40s, your 70s, you start doing some of those things and you think, oh, my God, I'm my dad. Let me give a little piece of advice here. This is a little free nugget. Spouses, okay? Please don't say to your spouse, you sound just like your mother right there. Okay? That's not helpful, okay? It's painful, all right? And because you didn't have the gall to tell them you're welcome, I did it for you. You don't have to point out to your spouses that they sound just like their parent. But the reality is that's all we have. That's what we fall back on. That's what's hardwired into us. And so customizing your parenting journey is I'm gonna customize the way that I parent based on who I am and what my core convictions are and based on who my child is and what's going to help them learn to make some great decisions in their life so that when they're grown up, they can do some amazing things. And it takes a lot of work. But listen, we have an opportunity to partner with God and to raise our kids in a way that honors them and honors Him. And when they're old, they won't run from that. They'll be happy. They'll be responsible, good citizens in our world. And here's the thing. God can use every person in this room to be a great parent to your kids. I know there are people here that need to hear that because you don't always feel that. You feel a burden of, I'm not the best parent that I can be. We've got to stop and relax and learn to trust God on this journey and realize that all the pressure is not on us. God's not surprised by our kids and how they're wired. He's not surprised when we make mistakes. And he wants us to chart our own course and to be ourselves. That's why today you heard Adam mention parent-child dedication. We did that, and we had seven families, I think, with a whole bunch of kids up here for parent-child dedication. Notice that it's parent-child dedication, not child dedication, because we really believe that parents have a responsibility to chart the course, that they can't outsource all of their parenting. Now, I realize that outsourcing Brendan to ride his bike, that maybe is not a great example. It's backfiring on me. But in general, I can't expect the school or the church to raise my kids. Did you know that? I have a responsibility to do it on my own. A couple of weeks ago, I threw out on Facebook this question that I was sort of wondering, like, if you could just sit down with a would-be parent, even if it's a teenager or a young adult or someone who's pregnant and about to be a parent, what's one thing that you would say to them or that you wish someone would have told you? And this one lady wrote this response that, to me, I felt like sort of summed up everything that I've said. And it really helped me. It really did. And I want to kind of close today by sharing her very wise words with you. She said, "You will be an imperfect parent of an imperfect child. But this is good for you both because learning love and grace, not perfection, will prepare your child for real life and bring him or her real joy. Even small children can be taught patience. And yes, you will sleep again. No, you won't ruin your child if you do or don't do or forgot about, fill in the blank. And just wait. Your heart will soon open in ways you never thought possible." Isn't that good? That's freeing to me. That tells me that I don't have to be the perfect parent. That being the perfect dad is never what God expected for me. That it is a trial and error, that I am going to do things that I'm going to have to apologize for. And parents, it's so important when we make mistakes on the journey that we apologize to our kids. And you might be here this morning and you're feeling right now really like, oh man, I've really blown it. You know, maybe you're feeling like, my kids are already out of the house, and I made some real mistakes as a parent, and I guess it's just too late. Listen, it's never too late to start becoming a good parent. I don't care how old you are, even if your kids are grown. There was a guy that came up to me last night, and he said, "Man, there were a lot of things that you said that really hit me and made me really think. But one thing stuck out to me is when I was in my 30s, my dad took me to lunch and said, 'Son, I need to just tell you some things.' And his dad proceeded to tell him that he had made a lot of mistakes as a dad and that he was sorry. And he didn't just say like one big blanket thing. He pointed out a number of specific things that he had done. That's pretty amazing that a guy who's in his 50s or 60s is able to sit down with his grown children and say, 'Listen, I messed up on these things and I'm really, really sorry. Will you forgive me? There was a better way.' And from that day forward, doing their best to continue being a great parent." Imagine the 30-year-old parent who grew up in dysfunction and they hear that from their mom or their dad, and now they change how they're parenting their kids because they realize what it's really all about. It's not too late to do that. And maybe you're here this morning and you're going through a really rough spot as a parent. Maybe you're going through one of the toughest times you've ever had where your kid has this behavior that you just can't seem to get under control, and you're trying all the right things and you just feel like you're sucking wind. Can I just tell you today, you're not alone. We all go through those times, don't we? Sometimes parenting is really, really, really hard. But if you're here and a part of this place, this one thing I love about the Orchard is this is a community where we prop one another up, where our stories are continuous. They don't just come to an end. We don't just say, you're a bad parent. It's, yeah, you're struggling with some things, but you can get better. And we're going to work hard to help you do that. So that's not the end of your story. God knows where you are. God is working. And as hard as it is, sometimes we just have to trust God with the journey. Would you pray with me? God, we acknowledge that parenting is so tough. And we just ask you for help. And God, for those people in this room who either don't have kids yet because they can't and they've been trying or they're not quite there, God, minister to them. Help them to see what it is you want to do in their life. Help them see the children in their life they do have an influence with. God, help us to trust you with our child's journey. Help us as a community to surround those single moms and dads who are laboring through parenting alone. Help us to begin to be open and honest with other people and other friends about our own journey. And let us support one another and cheer one another on. God, give us wisdom. Let us honor you as parents and to truly train our kids in the way that they should go, to be responsible, thinking children. And we acknowledge that our kids are a gift from you, and you, every good gift comes from you. And we celebrate that. And as a community, we ask all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.